Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Jules Gill, I have three words for you.
Oh, God.
Hi-Fi Rush. I forget the name, but you might have seen it.
No, I love this because not only 2 seconds before you started the recording for this, you said, I have got this, mate. I've got an intro
sorted
out.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, but so what was the name of the game then, just so the people at home?
I think it's Hi-Fi Rush. The thing is, I played it all last night. This is the game that got randomly shadow dropped at the Xbox. Yes, Shinji Mikami coming in, delivering the goods once again. A game that got just, it wasn't leaked, no one knew it was coming. From the Evil Within developers, Tango Gameworks, but their new game called Hi-Fi Rush.
Mm-hmm.
Rush
mm-hmm.
Hi-Fi? Mm-hmm. I don't remember. I was playing it all last night, and as I was playing it, I was like, I don't even know the name of what I'm playing. All I can think of is Jet Set Radio.
Yeah.
But it is a third-person hack and slash game that moves on the beat, it moves on the rhythm. So if you attack in time with the music, you do a lot more damage and everything else. And the soundtrack has at least the Black Keys on it. There's some licensed music on there. So I've done the first sort of couple of hours. I was playing it till about 1 a.m. last night.
Nice.
But I wanted to open on that. I should also say, this is the UBP.
The UBP.
The Entitled Partner Podcast. I'm Scott Tailford. That's Jules Gill.
I am indeed. And I will tell you what I think of Hi-Fi Rush, Rush, Hi-Fi, 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 Hi-Fi.
I think
that this game, I, again, had no idea about it at all. I saw the Bethesda showcase. I watched it and I was like, wow, is this a brand new Jet Set Radio Future game? And my hopes got so high, my friend. I was on top of Everest, but unfortunately, they came crashing down to the ground when I realized that, no, this is a hack and slash beat em up style thing. Admittedly, my emotions were repaired a little bit by learning that it was a rhythm action game, because I do love my rhythm action games. So all in all, it is a solid 6/10 for me in terms of the excitometer, because there is another Jet Set Radio Future spiritual successor that's in the works.
Yeah, it's Bomb Rush Cyberpunk.
That's the one, and it has the music by the same scorer from the previous games, whose name completely escapes me for the moment. Apologies, my friend.
Mr. Radio.
And so I'm much more looking forward to that than this,
right,
if I'm honest,
fair.
Because I've had a lot of hack and slashy stuff recently. Admittedly, the rhythm on beat attack action stuff is interesting, so I'll have to download it myself later and see how it is. But would you recommend it?
Yeah, man. I think the combat takes a little bit of getting used to, because they do want you attacking on the beat, but you're pushing the button to trigger the start of the swing, so you sort of like attack ahead of the beat. But then once the first animation is connected, then you can do the rest of it on the beat, which I know sounds weird. But it's weird because after you do a few fights, you start feeling it. You sort of just start attacking on the rhythm, and you start doing more damage and everything. But the main reason to play it is that it looks unbelievably gorgeous. Like it looks like this sort of cross of like Sunset Overdrive and just like insert cell shaded game.
Yeah.
Whether it's Sly Cooper or Cell Damage or something.
I was incredibly impressed with the fluidity of the motions between it. And I was like, okay, so they've actually thought of a clever art style and a very lovely sort of range of motions and animations for it. So yeah, again, I will check it out. But again, it's not Jet Set Radio Future. So again,
the thing is, like when I started it, I was like, because it's such Jet Set Radio vibes, like the color palette and everything. And it was like, I just started the second main level. I've done a whole bunch of stuff, fought some bosses and stuff. And then I started the next bit, and there's a rail going down some stairs right from where you start. And I was like, can I not just jump on that?
Yeah,
and then I just moved off it. And I was like, oh, if you just put a little grind in, it would have been perfect. But it was so close. But there is a whole like, I don't even hear those sirens in the background.
There was sirens. Who are they coming to get you, mate?
I think they're coming to get me.
Talking about a game that is so fresh off the market that it's almost illegal.
PlayStation got this Xbox game now. The Xbox actually make games again. That's what I was thinking, actually, was when it got released, when I started playing it, I was like, this is such a video game ass video game in the best way possible. Like, there's so many games now that are either trying to get more money out of you or are deliberately chasing some sort of trend or feel otherwise algorithmically created.
Yeah.
This is just such a throwback to like how they used to make games, and to some of it in a bit of a negative in regards to you recognize the tropes kind of thing. You recognize some of the pacing tropes. You'll see what I mean in terms of the way the combat encounters come together,
yeah.
Or some of the things that get said in the cutscenes where it's like, okay, we've had these setups like a million times, but it is done very genuinely, and it has a lot of like passion to it. You can just tell a bunch of devs were given a budget, like, and not a big AAA, oh my god, make millions budget. Just make a video game, just do it, and they did it, and it's beautiful, and it works, and it's like, it's just this breath of fresh air of like, is this what this is going to be like going forward? Maybe.
What I really enjoy about this is the fact that stealth launches are apparently still possible, and they can still surprise and capture that immediate sort of hype generation straight out of the gate. Because how many times do you and I sit here and think, my God, that AAA game that we've been watching gestate over the last 5 to 7 years sure is looking boring now because I've seen so much of it. And sometimes it can never live up to the expectations. So when you drop like this with zero sort of limitations on what people expect from your game, and you just capture that surge of adrenaline of like, oh, it's new, it's exciting, it looks this good, it's a secret, and now you can play it. That is a really interesting level of marketing that it just doesn't happen for most other games. And it's a risk. It is a big risk, let's face it, because if you don't know about a game, how are you actually going to sell your game?
Well, that's the thing. So I'll throw in McAllister NYC's question here, who said, after the Xbox Developer Direct, did we see anything that changed our mind about the state of Xbox in 2023? And it's interesting because I was thinking of it the way that you just described there, where I was like, this is a fascinating way to address the idea that Xbox don't have their cards to play, because they can just say, hey, by the way, fully complete, absolutely gorgeous, and it runs at 4K in 60 FPS. Like, it's just on Series X, it does anyway. And the idea of them just saying like, no, not only are we ready to go, but here's a beautiful, brilliant game ready to go. And they don't need to worry about marketing because they have 20 million Game Pass subscribers.
Yes.
So people will just give it a shot. All they need to do is convince you to fire it up for like 5 minutes or 10 minutes and give it a shot.
Yeah.
And then they've got their hooks in, kind of thing.
What they're doing is they're also creating perceived value for Game Pass in itself, because if you don't know what could drop next, there could be this massive game that's just going to arrive without any warning whatsoever. So you better get Game Pass now to make sure that you are ready for that moment. It then elevates Game Pass as what it is. It's not just a streaming service. It is now like an advent calendar that you open every single month and find new gems. So, yeah,
that's definitely what they wanted it to be.
An incredibly shrewd and smart move. Very risky, but when you look back at what you've been saying, maybe not as risky as it seems on the surface.
Well, that's the thing. It's always going to be like proof in the pudding. It reminds me of, this is the weirdest comparison, it reminds me of when Avenged Sevenfold Shadow dropped their last
album. That is a very weird comparison.
The whole idea of like, oh, you guys are so big, like, we would expect some sort of like a few singles beforehand or whatever.
Wait, did they actually just drop an album recently?
Yeah. They it's not recently, it's from 2 years ago, but I think it's called The Stage. But yeah, they just randomly tweeted like, hey guys, by the way, entire new Avenged album just right there, don't worry about it.
Interesting.
And I think that's always interesting, because it's like, it's always that assumption of an audience being hungry for something and waiting. And things like Pokemon Go or Apex Legends just blew up overnight because they were almost shadow dropped. And so sometimes it can work. It's obviously going to be like proof in the pudding. Is the actual product good? Is the actual thing good? In this case, Rush/Hi-Fi Rush Part 2.
Cell Shade Hi-Fi.
Is good. Yes, exactly. Is really good. Cell Damage, the revival. Is really good. And so, like, that is recommendable. And if you have Game Pass, there is literally no reason to not at least check it out. You might as well. You're not going to lose anything, and you might find your first, like, game you love of 2023. So I actually really like this as a potential show of what they're going to be like going forward. Because we've now had Pentiment, which was just an immediate 10 out of 10 game, all of like an RPG set in like history and everything.
I absolutely loved that, by the way. Was I correct in reading that there were some people that had like a bit of a issue with how the game played, that it was much more of a story-driven game than it was like a game? Like, people thought it was going to be like Valiant Heart and stuff like that. It was going to be more a beautiful-looking game that you still had a lot of action to do in it. Is it more of a point-and-click style thing?
Yeah, it's just dialogue-driven. There's no combat in it. It's all... I've not played that much of Pentiment, but it did review really well. You can tell that, like... I forget who developed it. I want to say Obsidian, but I'm probably wrong. But you can tell they really cared about just everything about that time period, the idea of recording history and how does it get passed on over time, and how do different events get portrayed and everything. And just the presentation of that game is just gorgeous. I think that taking that as an example, and then Hi-Fi Rush as another example, it's just a nice little nudge of like, okay, they might be onto something here, of just dropping great, solid games that know exactly what they are from dependable teams that are actually fun to play.
And this is the thing, we were always talking about how Microsoft dealt a massive blow to the future of Halo with the cutting of staff recently, but maybe this is them redefining what a huge video game publisher is, and that it's not about the mascots anymore, it's not about the tent poles, it's about the tent pegs, the things that are actually going to keep people rooted to the ground of the experience, which is good gameplay, good developers, and indie people, so basically sowing seeds for the future. I would personally be very happy to not get Halo Infinite 2 or Halo Infinite whatever it's going to be after this for a decade if it meant that I would get 30 to 40 brilliant independent developer houses put on the map and allowed to actually explore difference within the video game space.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. Like we say loads on, various podcasts and conversations about how I'd love some sort of return to smaller projects that are done well, and you don't have something like a Skull and Bones or the Avengers game, which is shutting down entirely in September.
That blows my mind, by the way. That, I know. That is, like, the fact is that game was so hype. It was basically their project to lose at the point of inception, because
how do you mess up an MCU style tie-in?
It does have solid fundamentals when it comes to its gameplay. It has all of the licenses, it has all of the scope, the entire villain back catalog to draw from, and the weight of Square Enix behind it, but it came laced with the worst aspects of the gaming industry at that point in time, and
character specific battle passes.
It's so funny to see the biggest things fall like this, because you tripped on your own laces, because you tied them together, you idiot. Like, what are you doing?
And that's the thing. Like, that was, I mean, I remember the initial response to like all the faces not being Robert Downey Jr. or not being Chris Evans. Sure. But then, only the combat was solid, but then it was just monetized to death, and it just wasn't very fun to play. The level layout sucked. Yeah.
Do you know what the funny thing is? Is that right now, Marvel's Midnight Suns is experiencing its first dose of DLC with the Deadpool DLC.
Deadpool's out today.
Yeah, that's the thing. And that game there reviewed exceptionally well, had great fundamentals, zero microtransactions. Or, like, even though the game was basically like primed to become one, riddled with them.
You could easily have done it, yeah.
And this is the thing, I'm looking at it now just going like, cool, I will give you my money because you've already proven that it's worth it and I want this game to succeed. Thank you very much. That's how you do a Marvel game.
That's the thing. If you want something that is just Marvel-y to get in, like, to just dive into and have fun with the characters and stuff, it is Midnight Suns. It's very like teen fiction, it's very young adult approaches to the relationships that you form with those characters, but we had a lot of fun with it, and the actual gameplay side of it,
delicious, man. It's so
actual strategy stuff is genuinely phenomenal. Like, I'm playing through Fire Emblem Engage right now, and as much as I love Fire Emblem, after Midnight Suns I was like, I think that's the future of turn-based stuff. It's just so immediate in the different ways you can combo everything together.
There's like I can't believe that I'm giving them this much praise, but the Sparks of Hope Mario versus Rabbids thing, the way that redefined the grid-based combat system, I actually went away from it thinking, cool, blimey, I actually wouldn't hate it if XCOM took a few pages out of this this book, really, to build XCOM 3, which I hope is coming. Please, Fire Access, please, please, please.
I know, it should eventually. I guess they'll get back to their roots again.
No more Chimera.
What's that franchise that you love? It's Valkyrie Chronicles.
Oh, Valkyrie Chronicles,
Yeah, that has the same kind of thing where it's turn-based, but you have like a range of freedom of movement within a space, and then it's the next turn. It's kind of just that, but like put in like a top-down, assumedly grid-based look.
Did you ever play Eternal Sonata?
No.
That had
the one that's based on Chopin's
life. It's so funny because it's like, imagine walking into the pitching meeting room and being like, I've got an idea for a video game. Boom, a JRPG. And everyone's like, yep, cool. I'm already so excited. But it's based on the fever dreams of Frederick Chopin. It's like, you've lost us slightly there. What? What are you saying? But that had a similar like battle system where you could run around, but you only had a specific amount of time to do all of your attacks in.
Right.
Doing certain attacks would limit your time even further. So the more powerful attacks would either cost you more time or take more time to do. And you could chain them together with your friends. I love games that have clever battle mechanics, because totally. You're going to be using them again and again, so you better make sure that they're good.
I will shout out Chained Echoes as well. That was like my most overlooked game from last year.
You actually brought this up before, actually. Yeah, you did. And I actually wrote it down to go check out. I've got a little list of games that Scott recommends that I will eventually get around to.
Games that I yell at you about every week. Please, Jules.
Like a town crier.
Next question from Pinky/Pingo, who says, what's your approach when returning to a big game after a lot of time away? Do you jump straight back in, or do you restart the whole thing? I wish more games had more tutorials for confused old farts like me. I back that. I wish every game had a, hey, you've been away for a while, here's the basics.
Well, this is the thing. I was just about to bring up the much maligned Alone in the Dark reboot of 2006 or 8 or something like that.
And okay, the last time they tried to reboot it.
Yeah, and what happened when they you would go to the new chapter, it was like previously on The Walking Dead, effectively, and it would tell you exactly what happened. So you'd be like, oh, cool, I haven't played this game in a few months, and I'm going to come back and pick exactly where I left off. I would love that recap feature for the likes of GTA, Red Dead Redemption 2, stuff like that, where like you start up your thing and it just has like a little 5-second flashback of like, I gotta get to Dutch, I gotta do this, or it's like, I can't believe that I've made it through this, and then it's like, boom, right back in, because Pinky, you've basically reminded me of how much time I have wasted going back to games that I have left on the back burner for way too long. They have gone cold and stodgy, and the film has grown over the top, and I don't like, ooh, it's disgusting. And so I've started brand new.
I always do the thing where like I sort of try and push through that initial awkwardness where I'm like, I don't even remember saving in this area. Yeah. Where even am I? And I just sort of keep going with it for a bit and read some updated, whatever the next quest is that I take on, and then try and remember whatever that was. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll source a YouTube video or something for the intro again or something. But I do think it should be an industry standard, like maybe just some sort of almost Assassin's Creed style where they put you in like a virtual reality space.
Well, like an animus, just, like you go in there and it's just kind of like, just says like, Scott's brain.
Yeah, it's like a loading thing and be like, okay, these were the moves, this is what you were doing, this is who you were, this is the side quest you were on, and just something that would sort of, to borrow a PR term, onboard you back into the game again.
Sort of like the Devil May Cry 2 or 3, which had like every time it went to a loading screen, it plopped you into that battle room where you just fought enemies until you were ready to get back into the actual thing.
Bayonetta has that.
That's the one I was thinking of. Yeah, that was quite useful, like, actually.
Yeah, anything like that where it's just sort of like, okay, what the hell am I in the middle of? Because sometimes I've picked up a save and I'm just in a fight with someone and I'm just like, I don't even know, like a hard fight. I'm like,
imagine that from the video game protagonist's like point of view, where it's just kind of like they stand idle for like about 5 months and then they just come like, have at you. Wait, who are you again? Like,
yeah, because I always find that it's like, oh, okay, this is like a hard fight that old me gave up on for a bit or wanted to give it a minute. And it's like, no, there's some insane like influx of attacks that I'm just not okay with or I wasn't remotely okay with.
That is a great point to make though, Scott. If you are struggling with a boss battle or an enemy, make sure that you beat it before you put the controller down and walk away, because if you couldn't beat it then, when you've honed your skills to that point and you've stepped away for 3 months, chances are you're going to find it even hard, and that's going to force the big restart.
It's true. I will conversely say that sometimes when you do that thing where you like it's late on at night and you give up on something, you go back first thing in the morning. Sometimes that first thing in the morning, you beat it first time.
Yeah, but you're not leaving it for 3 weeks though, are you?
No. Don't give it like 5 years or whatever. Because right now, I've picked up my old Persona 5 save. So I've like, I'm about 83
hours in. That's a rough one to get back into.
From 2017. I know. Oof. So I was just like, back to that. Because I stopped. Have you finished Persona 5?
I have indeed. And so 105 hours, I believe, that I chucked in
it's
that.
It's ridiculous. I'm in the, I just finished the Okamura dungeon where you're in the, like, it's like a spaceship and it's like a whole bunch of like techie spaces and you got to do all these flicking switches and stuff. Yeah. I did all that. And then he's like revealed his heart and stuff. But that's where I was. So I remember giving up, just being like, oh, I can't be bothered with this maze. I don't care. I'm 80 hours in. How is it not done? And so like I've picked it back up and that's where I am. So it's like in that moment being like, I don't remember what's going on. Phantom Thieves?
Yeah. And it's like, how do you remember all of the links you've built along the way? And you don't care necessarily. And that's not just because of like the writing or whatever. It's just like at that point, jumping back in fresh, you're like, what's going on again?
Well,
like why should I care about what's going on?
Yeah, there's something going on with a character called Haru, and I was like, I don't even remember you. Like, just you're in the party, apparently. I don't know. Anyway, next question from Jacob Sawyer, who says, do you think we'll see an increase in video game adaptations from HBO after the success of The Last of Us?
That's not a terrible idea, but what games... I mean, we've already had Game of Thrones games. We've already had... Have we had a Soprano game? We must have had
Soprano. There is a Sopranos tie-in on the PS2, but it was
remake
like... That was...
Remake that again. I'd love to... I tell you what, if Telltale were going to apply their thing of the episodic formulas,
oh my
the
God.
Sopranos one would be amazing.
a dialogue-based branching path Sopranos game would be incredible. Yeah, that would be a hell of a thing to do.
Every single episode you play from a perspective from a different family member, so that way at least you know that stuff would go wrong for each of them.
I would take that. I mean, if that whole rush of like the Sopranos game, the 24 game, the Shield game,
yeah,
like back in the day when TV series had their tie-ins. I assume Sawyer means the idea of like the HBO adaptation. Like what other games are like gritty enough to sort of bring up? I would totally do, because I think The Last of Us is sort of pioneering like the way to do it, where you borrow certain scenes and you sort of change other things. Episode 2 changed a lot more in terms of like the way the infected work and stuff. I guess something as heavy as like Red Dead has the weight to it that would match like an HBO production.
I guess
I'm trying to think of the weightiest games.
Well, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because I tell you what, a Disco Elysium crime caper show would be amazing if delivered through the HBO lens. I know I keep bringing it up and I'm apologizing right now, everyone. Every single week you get a little dose of Jules talking about Disco Elysium. I'd like to
If you look at what's happening with that IP, it's been like messed up and Amazon's got it and whatever.
It's been just left abandoned now. So Amazon Prime may turn it into a TV show at some point, but who knows, eh? I'd like to see Dishonored turn into a TV show, because I feel like that's got good things. Because imagine the setup of the kidnapped princess and obviously you trying to figure out where she is, and I feel like that crime caper slash assassination, which would allow things to get gory and gritty, plus the horror of living in that world and having the plague rats around all the time. I also think that Deathloop should be made into a TV show, because with Russian Doll recently on Netflix with the second season, it shows that Groundhog Day, time repeating itself, and Happy Death Day with its sort of horror elements well. I do think that there's elements that could be very interesting from a TV show perspective, where it's like, if they even played with the very concept of what a TV show is, you could have it that the events in the first episode have no bearing on what's going on until you finally watch the end episode and realize that it loops back to the first one. That is, in fact, end episode or something.
Yeah, there's that show, I don't know if it's out yet, there's that show that you can watch in any order on Netflix.
I've heard about this. Is it any good?
I've not seen that yet, but I think it's like 9 episodes, but you can watch them in any order, and somehow it still pays off. I'm guessing it's just 9 different perspectives. But they could do something cool with time or whatever. Because, I don't know what HBO are necessarily looking for. Looking at the making of The Last of Us, it seems like Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann just struck up a conversation.
Yeah.
And Mazin was a huge fan of the game, so he was like, we should do this. But like, it wasn't like it was HBO actively looking for something. But I do agree that considering the success of it, I mean, apparently the game sales are up like 200, 300%. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's working across the board. And I guess we know we're getting a God of War show.
Yeah.
And we're getting the Fallout show and the Horizon show and the Ghost of Tsushima movie. So it's like, there are more coming, but HBO is not attached to any of them. It's all Netflix and Amazon. So I don't know if
maybe in that sense, Scott, because they're going to look at the competition and think, right, okay, so video game adaptations are going to be the thing and we're all going to end up looking the same, because let's face it, everyone homogenizes every idea because that's the easiest way to sell it when you say it's like this, but with that. What if they go against the trend and choose a game that isn't gritty and turn it into something that is like the heavy HBO drama? What if we got like
Jet Set Radio,
Bomberman, or Kirby, but he's a down on his luck drunk? You know what I mean? Like,
I was thinking you could do a Kirby, but you follow one of the what the hell do you call the dudes that he eats? Any random NPC?
Like King DDD's minions.
King did it. Yeah. All those random dudes. I can't think of their names now. I've played so much Kirby.
We're going to call them the Grumpkins.
The little orange Grumpkins. If you just followed them, a little family of them, and they hear about this entity that is destroying the city, is eating everything, Simpsons style. It ate everybody, and it's just outside somewhere.
So it's them preparing for the coming storm. It's like the pink wave is coming. We must prepare for it.
Fable 3 style. This big the crawler, the Kirby, is eventually coming. I would totally do that, because Kirby's terrifying.
You just came up with another great example. Fable. Fable as a TV show would actually work really well.
Yes. I guess if you make it like whimsical enough, if you can nail the sense of humor and the tone and stuff, do Fable as an Arcane style animation, because that animated style would match perfectly with Fable.
That would be good.
I would take that. Next question from Tom, who says, if we could play only one game forevermore, what would it be?
Oh, blimey.
Potentially a torturous question.
You'd want to almost choose a game that has infinite possibilities, in the sense that you can just keep playing and doing stuff. Oh, I don't know. That's a really tough question, because there's no...
I don't know why, but my mind went to Windjammers. I love
really,
Windjammers
forever,
so much.
Forever. It's better when it's two player, mate, and you're just playing it on your own.
Your face. Really? Yeah, I would. I mean, I don't know how much we are. I don't imagine if we're, are we pulling shifts on these games? Are we just checking in for half an hour a day? I just love Windjammers so much that I could do a cheeky little Windjammers every day.
Fair enough, man. I mean, the thing is that my mind's thinking to what games do I enjoy the most, but I'm starting to realise that they would actually be slogs if I only played them together. Like, imagine waking up and playing XCOM 2 Forevermore. Like, I love that game, but it would leave my emotions in tatters, that my mind would be an absolute blancmange.
You could do Midnight Suns, and you can just pretend you've got friends. Like, just sort of hang around and go, hey, yeah, but Wolverine,
is that what happens is that you'll play it so much that you'll finally get the dialogue to start looping again, and then that's when you know that the gameplay is, like, it will shatter around you when you're like, they're not my friends. They're just algorithmically just spouting nonsense just randomly. Oh, no. Animal Crossing.
You don't want to go swimming at all?
You know what? Minecraft. I'll go Minecraft. Just because Minecraft's the fact you make whatever you want out of it, and that way I can just entertain myself forevermore. I've never even played it. I played it maybe for like 3 or 4 hours in total. That's it. I've never played any more of it because it's a game that's limited by your own imagination.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
And my imagination plus my ADHD tendencies meant that I was just like, I want to make this. I don't know how. I'm annoyed. I'm leaving. Like,
The thing is, me and my wife played quite a lot of it. I think I've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. But super quickly, that was my biggest stint on Minecraft, is when we sort of did, you know, in Inception, where it's like you get the reveal that like Leonardo DiCaprio and his partner like lived in the fake world, whatever, for as long as possible. and lived in their minds for as long as possible. Me and my wife did that for a while, where we just built a utopia inside Minecraft, and then it was attacked by a bunch of creepers that blew it up. And then we were like, well, F it then. We can't live here anymore. And then it was like, well, all of our best laid plans. But I like the idea of like doing a living in that space, and sort of like someone goes out and gets all the firewood in, all the different crafting components, and you're building at home or something. That's kind of fun. But yes, next question from the 25th Gunner of 2023, who says, if the Mario movie is a massive success and leads to more animated Nintendo movies, what IP would you like to see get a movie? For them, it's a Rocky-style arms movie. That would be the dream.
That'd be very, very fun.
I would do, if you can do a Rocky-style Nintendo thing, surely it's Punch-Out. You just do
that would be out. So fun, actually. If you've got like a little Mac and he's just literally a tiny guy and he's just like, I can do it. I can beat the toughest guys in there. And you get a cameo from Mike Tyson at the end. Like he playing the big boxer whose name I can't remember. Why can I remember the name that they gave him? Because it was used to be Mike Tyson's Punch Out, but then they changed his name.
Oh,
didn't
and they swapped it.
Oh, what's the name?
Yeah, it's like Mr. Dream or something.
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, because we mentioned there before, I guess the idea of like an arcane based Fable game would be cool. Mm-hmm. A Fable movie would be kind of cool. But yeah, what do you think in terms of the where are you at on the Mario movie? I don't think we've talked about it.
I am optimistic, cautiously maybe. I really hope that it is a success, because I do feel like at least it's trying something different while at the same time adhering to what made the game franchise so popular. We're not getting another sort of gritty Blade Runner-esque thing with Bob Hoskins walking around going, hey, Mario, Mario. We're getting we're definitely getting a film that is aware of its own lineage and also the memes and joke history that it's got. So I really hope that they're going to lean more into that, because I feel like if they want this film to be a success, obviously, you're going to have good character arcs, excellent writing, Chris Pratt actually trying a Mario voice at some point. But you are going to need
to... That's what he's doing.
You're going to need to pay reference to the audience that got you there. There's got to be in-jokes. There's got to be sides, like little winks and nods to the community that really go into looking at the sort of silliness and the ridiculous aspects of Mario itself, if you want it to be reverential. So, yeah, hopefully it will do well. And if it does do well, what game would I like to see turned into a movie?
That's the thing for Nintendo as well. It's like, do they... Cause assumedly, they've done Mario, they should then do Zelda. It's nearly always Mario, then Zelda. But it's like, what... I would assume they do some sort of, like, Toon Link setting. It's like, what era of Zelda do you adapt? But, like, you know...
Well, we've been seeing it with the Enter the Spider-Verse stuff, with the multiversal theory. There's obviously the very fractured timeline between the Hero of Time and the failure of the hero. And there's all these different, like, links and all of their impacts that they've had on it. So what if they made it so that it's like Toon Link exploring his own histories, trying to find himself as a hero or something like that? So
that could kind of work. That'd be kind of cool. The thing is, like, I'm just curious. It's just a stupid question, but I'm like, in 2023, when it's all said and done, what's going to be a better adaptation, The Last of Us or Mario? Like, by the time they've both been done,
I hope that it's The Last of Us, if I'm honest, because I do think that Mario has sold enough units. It doesn't need as much stuff, but I think that moving forward, gaming history needs to remember The Last of Us for what it did in terms of pushing the boundaries as to storytelling and how to deliver emotion. And I feel like that's more important to the overall conversation of video games as art. Yes, it is.
True.
But you know what I mean? There's still people discussing it to this day. In terms, I'm just going to pull a game out of my bald head and turn that into a movie. And I think that we should do...
an animated movie.
Let's do Payday. Let's do Payday. I want to see a heist movie. I want to see a heist movie with the crazy over the top nature that we've got there. And I feel like we since Ocean's 13 absolutely dried the riverbank full of creativity, because that was awful. We haven't had a good heist movie in a long, long time.
You know what? What's that mission? There's a mission in The Witcher 3 where they have to do a heist. I think it's in The Witcher 3. It's in some fantasy. I'm remembering someone writing about a fantasy. Okay. In a fantasy RPG, there was a heist mission. I want to say it's in The Witcher, even though I didn't play it myself. Either way, the idea of a high fantasy, a heist taking place in a high fantasy band with high fantasy characters.
Fantasy. I like that.
That's that would work really well. And that would be really original as well.
Was it Dragon Age Origins or something, where it's like the, it's got the dwarf who's telling the story to the people who are in, who are like interrogating him, but he changes the story as it goes on.
The thing I'm thinking,
because that's
of,
a good, that's a good character arc, not a narrative arc though, because if you've got somebody telling the truth, kind of like Kaiser Soze in the what's it called, what's the name of the
Usual Suspects.
You could have it so that it's like a heist fantasy version of that, where he's talking about mythical legends and warriors, but what's true and what's like, not could be quite good.
There's nowhere near enough heist movies in general. Like, I remember Zack Snyder's whole zombie one was a cool idea. That I thought that movie was boring as hell.
Oh,
but
yeah,
like,
that did actually.
But that whole idea of like a heist taking place inside a zombie apocalypse. It's like, just add a heist to literally anything.
Yeah,
like
it's better.
Like in the Andor TV show, they do a there's a great heist series of episodes in there, and it's like just plug it in. Heist plus Star Wars is great. Heist plus Fable is great. Just do it.
Like the heist formula for storytelling is just one that is absolutely sublime, because you lay out to the audience exactly what you hope to achieve, thereby building tension when even the slightest bit doesn't go to plan, and you get to generate all of that lovely emotional drama between people. Can they trust each other? Are they out for themselves? It's just. But you're telling the audience from the off, this is what we're doing. You don't even need to hide it. You don't even need to be clever. You just go, this is what we do. Can we do? Like, it's brilliant.
I need to try and think of that. I'll have a Google in a minute. I need to try and think of that Witcher thing, because there is some sort of high fantasy heist thing in video games. But next question from Flood31, who says, what are our thoughts on tacked on multiplayer elements to games? The Tomb Raider reboot springs to mind. The mode was fun, but was it needed?
No, it wasn't needed at all, because if you look at the entire impact that it has on the tone of the game, this is Lara Croft's survival tale. So the moment that you add in other heroes to that tale, you dilute her perspective on it. It's meant to be her origin story. The focus is on her. The multiplayer aspect on it was functional. It was fine. It was totally unnecessary. So why was it in
Because we had a couple of questions about just like that old era of when every game just had multiplayer, like BioShock 2, like Arkham Origins. I don't know about you, but for me, the most pointless multiplayer where I was consciously going like, why the hell does this exist, was in The Darkness. I don't know if you played The Darkness.
Oh,
1.
Oh, yeah. What? That, but that had like, multiplayer, didn't
like
it?
Online deathmatch multiplayer where weird. Like some players were, I don't know if they were Jackie Estacado, but they were characters with guns. And then I remember just shooting some of the character or player as like a little goblin man. And I was just like, this is just the most asset. Just take the assets from the single player and put them in an open space. And it was just the most thrown together thing.
And it's the time that it's taken to make those multiplayer elements on it. I guess that it's the precursor to the games as a live service, because what you're doing is you're adding longevity, thank you. I was gonna say longevity, which is not a word. Longevity to a game by adding in something to keep players coming back and experience something new, whilst being able to push DLC content through to it as well. It's on paper a clever idea, but in practice it does destroy the tone of your game quite a lot, because if it doesn't match up, if it doesn't make sense, then why is it in there? Like, I arguably think that BioShock 2 had a brilliant multiplayer suite that had just enough tenuous links, because it was to do with the fall of Rapture and how it got into the state that it is in. I feel like it had just enough to keep me going back in. Although if you did start looking at it too closely, it fell apart like wet cake, because let's face it, being rewarded for going out and killing other civilians with a reward program that was built into it, it was like, I don't know, man. Why couldn't you just say you scavenge some weapons? Why couldn't you just be out for yourself a bit? I don't know.
Well, that's the thing where they try and make it work like as if it was attached to the single player canon, where it's like they work best when they're just disconnected entirely. Like,
yeah, I would actually say that it would have benefited from not being part of it, but actually being a standalone thing that just came out and was like, hey, do you want to just play BioShock The Fall of Rapture? It's own online thing, and it'll be just there. You can just play it for free.
Well, like that Final Fantasy Battle Royale thing. It's like, oh, this is the
is
first
still
soldier.
Going, by the way?
No, they're shutting it down. I think that's shutting down this year, or it shut down last year.
Do you know what? That's something a real shame. I heard people saying that it was actually pretty good. I never played it, but I heard that people saying that it's like, for a Battle Royale that came way after the fact, and the fact that it's Final Fantasy once again throwing its hat into whatever ring is going, it's like, I don't know. People said it was okay.
Yeah, I guess. It looked like it played well enough. I was just like, I never need a Battle Royale add-on to my Final Fantasy VII memories. Like, what are you doing?
So there is one other multiplayer mode that I didn't expect to love as much as I did, and that was the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer mode, the wave survival thing. Because I really dug that, man. That was brilliant. The loot box generation that you get from it, admittedly, it was grindtacular, but me and my friend Liam, we played through that endlessly, because every couple of months they would drop a new pack of like another four characters that all had different like classes and all the other like weapons and stuff like that, and it made it feel fresh. Plus you would take all of those rewards, funnel them into the single player, and at the time, because I hadn't completed it yet, I thought that I was really making a giant impact on my final progress for the end of this game. Admittedly, it didn't go anywhere, but still, I love the idea that it could have done something.
Well, it's a weird thing, right? Because I was going to mention before, like Dead Space 2 had multiplayer, and then obviously 3 has the co-op and stuff. But I don't know if that is like some sort of overlooked thing. Like I was watching gameplay footage of it, being like, it just looks weird, a bunch of Isaac Clarks all shooting each other with a plasma thing.
It's the Jurassic Park syndrome, isn't it? Because it's like, just because you can doesn't mean that you should.
Final question from Kevin, who says, with Forspoken and Callisto Protocol reviewing and potentially selling worse than expected, if games like the Dead Space remake and Resident Evil 4 remake are more successful, should we be more worried about getting new IP going forward?
So it's always a risk, isn't it, to launch a new IP because you don't have any backing from it. You don't have any goodwill from the audience apart from the developer or publisher's name. And it's a huge monetary investment for both sides of the coin. So I don't think it will dent major AAA IPs being attempted, but it will put more pressure on them to succeed. And unfortunately, that means that it'll probably end up with the companies like Square Enix, EA, whoever, saying this game needs to make $500 million back versus what it used to only need to break even to get a sequel.
Yeah. I think it gives ammo to the worst people in the room. Like if you're in some sort of business meeting with someone who just wants to do the safe thing, then they have two big examples to point to and be like, look what happened when the new IP, it didn't work very well, did it? Yeah. Whereas like obviously the reality of that is what we said before about like the actual proofs in the pudding and the products themselves not being that good. Callisto and Forspoken are so clearly fundamentally unsatisfying and badly made in various areas. So that's why they failed. Like it wasn't the fact that it was a new thing. Like that whole idea of like banking on the past is the only way to do it. Like that's just so boring. I guess actually last night, Hi-Fi Rush Rush Hi-Fi proved that you can just do a brand new thing and have a lot of word of mouth.
But that
wasn't
AAA. It wasn't a AAA launch, was it? Let's face it. If it was,
it's interesting though because it feels like it. Like it does feel like a big. Well, it feels like a big pristine. You know, like it's beautiful. It's a 4K 60 frame rate game. Like,
yeah, no, I get what you mean by that, but I don't think that you can ever qualify it as being a AAA game if it got a shadow launch. I don't know of any game that is like that you could class as AAA. Because AAA games, by their very nature, are ones that have huge amounts of investment for the marketing and development going into them. So, it's hard to say.
It's interesting because it's weird because I would say that Hi-Fi Rush is kind of on par with Callisto in terms of what it feels like, the amount of budget that went into it. Whereas Forspoken feels much bigger. It feels like this big, lumbering, weighty, open world, endless thing. Whereas like Callisto and Hi-Fi feel a lot more focused, but that is interesting. There's sort of like the market, how much the marketing factors into it. But yeah, it's there's arguments for both sides. The cold business people just want the safe stuff. Whereas I think that just fundamentally people need new things.
Oh, 100%. And it's always the worry as well that every single sequel you put out, unless you are one of these exceptional, very rare lightning in a bottle franchises, you are going to experience diminishing returns and it is going to get worse and worse and worse. And if a huge tent pole style IP falls through the cracks, what do you have to replace it? It's the WWF moving from Hulk Hogan into Bret Hart era. It is, if you have this massive draw but you haven't built up any baby faces or people to step into his shadow, then the company suffers as a result, and they need to have a handful of other IPs waiting in the wing to then step in should something go drastically wrong. Like look at EA and Battlefield 2042. That was a surefire hit of a franchise for many, many years. The foundation has been irreparably cracked by the devastating release of that game. And so much so that Battlefield 5 had that huge upsurge in people playing it because they just said, this isn't the game that we want. That has put what was a surefire thing into question. And EA must be sweating bullets, quite literally, on that. Because what do you do when you're one of your biggest flagships just goes, nah, Nah.
Well, it's just, that's the thing. It's like, I would just, I don't know why they moved away from it so much. I know it's because of how much money it takes to make the games in the first place. But the idea of putting the marketing budget into the new thing, that's obviously what we've got with Forspoken. But then the more people saw of that, it just wasn't very satisfying, whether it's in the dialogue or the gameplay. And then Callisto, it's like Callisto had a massive marketing budget to it. Like Glenn Schofield was over on Vanity Fair and everything talking about the game. But then the actual game itself just wasn't that solid. Mm-hmm. So the approach is right, but it's very rare that the actual final game for the new IP is the thing that is massively recommendable. I think one of the last times that happened was like Apex Legends or something, where it was just immediately, oh my God, you need to play this. And PUBG had it a few years prior as well. There'll be some more examples, but in terms of like really big mainstream stuff, like Among Us, I guess, like something that really, really takes off.
I think that you need to almost not look at ever making AAA new IPs again. Mm. You need to cultivate them into it. Like none of these games started as being these flagship things, apart from maybe the Marios and the mascots, because of the fact that they were basically a console saying, this is what you play us for. Mm-hmm. So you look at the likes of games that are reviewed incredibly well. Mm. Let's just use Hades as a good example of that. That was an impeccably polished indie developed video game. Mm-hmm. Hades 2, that's approaching the market with such buzz and attention that is a AAA, admittedly caveat indie title. If it goes to Hades 3, my God, I reckon that we would say that is a surefire AAA video game franchise right there. Mm-hmm. Because you're not...
That's a really good point.
You're not judging AAA. It's so hard to try and express what AAA is without tripping over myself. It's not necessarily just because it had a ton of money sunk into it. It's not just because it has a celebrity name or a recognizable brand attached to it. It's about the huge impact it leaves on the video game community, or what it would be like if it were to step back. What hole would need to be filled by something else? Call of Duty, great example, is a AAA. If Hades keeps pushing forward, it could be the new version of what AAAs could be.
I think that's interesting. I think that idea of building to something is definitely the thing that a lot of the biggest publishers have gotten away from. They're just like, let's just put all this money into it and it'll immediately be the next Call of Duty, like an X-Defiant or something like Forspoken being like being an immediate head draw or audience draw or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like you said, if Forspoken was a smaller game initially and actually nailed the fundamentals and nailed this idea of this mysterious world, and then you did your open world sequel, that would be a much safer and better way to do it that would get people on board.
Yeah.
If Callisto didn't blow its budget getting all those actors in or whatever and just focused on the combat model, then when you fleshed it out and said, hey, by the way, Gwendolyn Christie's on the podcast and whatever, all that stuff would work so much more naturally. They think they're making safe bets, but when you really think about it, like you said, it needs to be incremental, and the safety is in doing the small game first. It's like if they do another Hi-Fi Rush and it's a much bigger world, it makes more sense. Like I don't know why the hell we got away from that so much. Like that idea of just jump to the trilogy as the first, the third installment as the initial one instead.
Yeah, well, it's just because they want instant returns. It's that they think, okay, we're investing this amount in, so we want that amount back. And it's like, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. Like you ticking a box saying, oh, let's spend $500 million on hiring all of these actors and having all this extra bit on it. No, nail your gameplay and your premise first. Like, again, we're not paying for your dinner. Like, stop it.
No, I think that's a really, really good point. I think, that's one of the key things that they've gotten so far away from. But anyway, for now, this has been the Entitled Partner Podcast. A massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions and thoughts and everything else. Mm-hmm. I didn't say UBP, but I have now. I'm Scott Tilford. That's Jules Gill.
Indeed, I am. And remember, you can go check out our social medias where you can get up to date for the call for questions every single Thursday, apart from this Thursday because we're recording it early because I'm off tomorrow because I'm an idiot and didn't plan that well. So go follow Scott over on Twitter at @LP89, and you can follow me over on Instagram at RetroJ, where the O is a zero. We'll be asking for your questions on both social media sites. Big love.
Be beautiful. Thank you all very much once again, and we'll catch you next week.
Goodbye. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing.
Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.